You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, September 2nd, 2012, and miles below the Earth's surface in our secret bunker, this is the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with Ben Carver of Animation Aficionados.
Yo, yo.
And from BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
And I'm Jason Strasberg, the news editor for the show. Well, let's get started with our top story because time is sparing. We're going to go to Bleeding Cool, where they interview David Gallagher and Steve Ellis about their new company, Bottled Lightning. Both are known for their work for Comixology, Marvel, and DC. But what's significant about this interview is that it lets us see how more big-name producers are getting into the business of webcomics and their strategies for taking advantage of them. It's worth noting that Gallagher and Ellis only mentioned titles like Thrillbent and Maps and Legends as good examples of digital comics. So go over and take a little check out of this interview, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it a little later. That's it for our top story, so I'm going to move it over to The Buzz with Eric.
Thank you, Jason. We have two stories this week in The Buzz. The first one coming to us from Comic Book Resources and talking about a poll that they did last week. Last week, Robot 6 ran an informal poll asking readers what draws them to a new title, a familiar character or a familiar creator. The response wasn't huge, but it is noteworthy. Out of the 112 respondents, just 25 said they held characters in more weights than creators. The author of the article, Corey Blake, attempts to formulate the reason for this, theorizing that while readers have specific characters they make exceptions for, seem to be able to enjoy wider spectrums of comics instead of huddling in one corner. At the Webcomic Beacon, we'd like to investigate this further, so let us know what you feel is more important in a new webcomic, creator or character. Just go to the webcastbeacon.com and leave a comment in this post. Our second story comes to us from Bleeding Cool, and it's a bit of a sad story. As you have heard here before, there has been an effort to digitize Cerebus. Well, there was a fire at the warehouse that held the Cerebus negatives. There are a total of 200 pages between issues 41 and 50 that were not including covers, and 69 originals that were not scanned, and 130 pages of film negatives that were lost to the fire. It was a huge loss to the digitizing effort. The people in charge of this effort said that they are going to try high-quality prints and get the best quality they can, but we've lost a lot of the original artwork here that cannot be recovered. That's it for The Buzz, and back to you, Jason.
Thanks, Eric. Hey, I want to interject one last story. This is a little timely, but as of last night, I just wanted to say, as according to The Buzz, congratulations to a Digger Comic, which during the Hugo Awards last night, and if you're not familiar with the Hugo Awards, these are the awards presented for great work in science fiction and fantasy. Digger Comic was awarded the award in... One second. I think it was... Yes, for the Hugo Award for Best Graphic Story. You may be familiar with this award. I think it's been given to Schlock Mercenary in the past and Girl Genius. So it's nice to see someone else getting it, and I just want to say congratulations to Ursula of Digger Comic. All right, moving on to education. Our first story comes to us from Instructables. Now, Instructables is a web portal for home ed technology projects, and this small story tells us how to properly photograph your creation for Kickstarter. Several of us right now are looking at Kickstarter still as a way to go for small projects. So these six steps listed on the site go through some basic considerations for presenting your work in the best light. While the steps are not actually specific to Kickstarter and more advice for taking good pictures in general, they are still something to keep in mind when you're trying to get people to support your project. Next up, we have a story that comes to us from Creative Block, spelled C-R-E-A-T IVEBLOQ.com, we get to hear from one of the people who inspired Comic Sans. According to Wikipedia, the definitive source for the facts that are usually true, Comic Sans was created by designer Vincent Conair. Based on two comic books that were in his office, The Dark Knight Returns, lettered by John Costanza, like the guy on SciFound it says in the pronunciation. Yes. And also was Watchmen, lettered by Dave Gibbons. Really? You had to spell out Gibbons for me. Thanks. In the article, Gibbons gives his opinion of the font. In short, he does not like it. He says, quote, "So the whole thing always looks wrong to me. I think it's a blight, an absolute blight on modern culture." Well, for more on Gibbons' opinions and a brief video of Vincent Conair himself describing the origin of the font, check out the show notes. Frightening. Our next story for education, and actually our last, comes to us, in his innovative blog on computerworld.com, Patrick Thibodeau innovates your thought on the innovative use of the word innovate. He innovatively says that the word innovative should not be used in an innovative ways, that business innovates to use it. Basically, what's trying to be pointed out here is that Patrick Thibodeau wants us to know that innovation is the most abused word in the business world, which anybody who sat in a conference meeting for more than 5 minutes can definitely tell you this. He says, true innovation radically alters the way we interact with the world. It is something like air conditioning, the combustion engine, or the telephone, not the smartphone. But in tech, every little thing is called innovative. You can read more about this innovative article by following the links in our show notes. And that's it for education. I'm going to turn it over to Ben to do our tech section.
The first tech article we have here is about making tablet-friendly websites. This is based off of an article by Steve Smith on MediaPost.com. It's basically talking about there's many ways of doing this. First and foremost, this article is mentioning responsive web design, which is basically using media queries and CSS to make a page change its layout depending on the browser page. And, of course, there are other ways of doing this. The other way of doing it is with user agent strings. But basically, this is a great idea on functionality of websites, and something that, as a web designer, I've practiced many times in the past. And it's funny how many major sites and minor sites use it, and sites that should be using it, like Amazon and Apple, don't. And to just check out the article, it's very interesting, and there's tons of resources on responsive web design, and I personally think responsive CSS is the better solution than user agent strings. And next up is the Kindle Fire version 1 is sold out forever. The Kindle Fire has been selling rather well. Amazon said that they have about 20% of the market share now in the United States of the tablet market with just the Fire alone. And this is around the time that everyone's expecting a redesign for the next model. So they sold out their remaining stock, and they're moving on to the next model, which should be released in the next couple of weeks. And finally, we have an article about Comic Press's theme companion made obsolete by Jetpack. Comic Press, of course, is the webcomic-based WordPress plugin, and apparently the theme companion is now obsolete. Jetpack is a plugin that offers advanced features for WordPress sites such as statistics, collaboration, and design tools. So basically, this far outshines what Comic Press's theme companion does, with much more versatility. And the whole article is on frumf.net. All right, back to you, Eric, for tidbits.
Well, technically back to Jason first, who will hand it off to me. Jason?
I will cede. It's okay.
All right.
Eric, with tidbits.
With tidbits. Well, starting off with tidbits, we have a quick tidbit from Boing Boing. Just a little article, a little comic showing from artist Laura Park, showing her response to her medical bill that she got after surviving cancer, which was unbelievably high. We then have another tidbit coming to us from Comics Alliance, and this is an art exhibition showing superheroes as illegal immigrants, pointing out that many superheroes are in the country illegally and taking away jobs from American-born superheroes, and there's a little art exhibition showing that. And then... On the heels of innovation, we have a tidbit that talks about editor Ben Abernathy leaving DC Comics for Madefire. Madefire is a company that makes motion comics for tablets, and he has left for this company and is now part of their effort to, as they actually say, innovate comics using new media. That's it for our tidbits, and back to you, Jason.
Thanks, Eric. I just want to comment that Ben Abernathy was DC's digital editor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's catching the wave of tech there. You know, he saw something, he grabbed for it, and he left DC.
You're really trying to kill me, Jason, aren't you?
Oh, you're busting my balls, man.
My opinion on motion comics is well known.
On to oddities with me. Okay, we have two stories in oddities this week. The first has to do with Harvard, who is developing cyborg flesh at Extreme Tech. You can go over to the article, and actually it's a lot of detail on how their lab is going in to create cyborg flesh by taking half-living cells and half-electronics and weaving them together on a structure at a minuscule level. There are photos, but, you know, it's if you're really, really interested in this stuff like I am, it's really cool. But I really do want to ask, did anybody think about the zombies at this point? It's not edible. So what are we going to do?
Actually, from what I'm hearing is the first words it uttered when they built a full working model is, I'll be back.
So the undead are coming back. And on to our next story, ants using TCP. From Popat. Actually, popat.com. If you are familiar with the TCP protocol, I could actually... Ben, would you like to tell us a quick thing about the TCP protocol?
TCP protocol, huh? Oh, yeah. That's what's going to be replacing HTTP if things all go well.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is HTTP has certain limitations in latency and other things, including response time, overall speed. You know, TCP is something that Google's backing, that mm-hmm. the idea is this will change how HTTP works to where it's now TCP. And, you know, number one, you can get thousands more domain names, because one thing people don't tell you is with HTTP, there's actually an actual numerical limit to how many domains you can have in the world.
I'm hearing it's more efficient and it's probably more secure at this point, right?
Well, that's true too, but like I said, the TCP started because of that eventual limit.
Which brings us to the next part of the story, which is the trippy science factoid mentioned in the article, is that researchers at Leaford Stanford Junior University have discovered that harvester ants, which are also known as the most venomous insect in the world, have been using TCP all along, and that's really, really scary. So next time you log on to a website, remember that you're probably doing something that an insect is. All right. And that is the end of our news section. We are going to take a really quick break, introduce another of our guests, and be back to you to discuss this week's news. See you in a minute.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We're also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. And now it's time for us to go into our discussion section of the show with our two special guests, actually. Seraphin of AsylumSquad.com.
Hi.
Hi. And you've already met Ben Carver of Animation Aficionados.
Hello.
Hello. And also we have in our discussion Eric Kimball of Blade Bunny.
Greetings.
And myself, Jason Strasberg. So let's get started. The first story that we really wanted to discuss, or at least, you know, shake our fists at, was the fire that destroyed the Cerberus negatives. Seraphin, we wanted to bring it to you first because you mentioned that that really sucks, which I agree with.
Well, how did this fire start? Like, what triggered it? Was it electrical or?
We're unsure how it started at this point. There's still an investigation going on. So they don't know how it has started. They just knew it took out a lot of things that were supposed to be digitized. And there was actually a Kickstarter for this.
Yeah, it went through. Yeah, to digitize the second volume. But let me just take a step back here. If you've seen any of the videos or if you've ever seen Dave Sims anything from his house, I think he has this stuff just sitting around. So I wasn't really surprised when I read this article.
Yeah.
But they had got a huge kick.
Well, and this happened, when did this happen?
Just a week ago. Hello?
Whoops, it looks like we had a quick technical difficulty there. So we can go right back to talking about the fire that basically destroyed some of Cerberus Digital's information. Back to Seraphin.
As somebody has just gotten familiarized myself with Cerberus, I actually haven't gotten too far into the series. What initially drew me to the series is the art. I haven't actually read too much of the story, so I'm only slightly familiar, but this is one of the, like, probably one of the worst things that a creator can imagine happening to the work. I mean, digital loss is one thing, to lose data on a computer, but it would be horrible in that case if you didn't have hard copies, but to actually lose those hard copies, I can't think of anything worse. Like, there was one instance in my apartment where I caught a potential electrical fire before sparks were flying out of an outlet. And I just thought, if I had been out, then all of my artwork could have been gone. So I can't imagine how horrible this must be for Dave Sim. Just like a nightmare.
Yeah. And the real horror is that they had just raised a ton of money to digitize this. So it wasn't going to be digitized. And then they said they were going to do it. And then they had the fire, so it's really a pain. But they seem to have figured out a way to work around it. It won't be as good artwork, but it'll just at least be passable.
Yeah. And I'm also, like Dave Sim, I'm kind of, I've heard, because I have friends who actually know him. I'm with the Toronto Comic Jam group, which is a monthly meetup at this place in downtown Toronto. It's like a little like bar / performance space, and we go and we just draw comics for like 5 hours. And anyway, one of the people there is familiar, knows Dave Sim, and knows that he is a Letra Set hoarder. And I've also kind of gotten into Letra Set. I like to do things the old fashioned way. I like to do everything on paper and then just scan it, clean it up on Photoshop and pop it online. I really am kind of alienated by all these tablets and all these toys these young things have nowadays. I like to do shit really old school. So, you know, I'm hoping that he didn't lose all that Letra Set either, because that stuff is expensive. It's really expensive now.
Yeah.
All
right.
Essentially not cool.
Yeah. I mean, duh, a fire burning, you know, it's not cool, but
Well, we didn't start the fire. It was already burning.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
I'm just looking it up right now. Just looking it up right now online, see what I can find about it.
We wish Dave the best and that he can get that Kickstarter project out because it was really exciting. We'll move on to the Comic Sans story from Dave Gibbons, where one of the people that all love to hate is just Light on Culture. Speaking of Lights on Culture, Ben.
That sounds like you're singing again.
He sounded like Neo going into the Matrix.
What he said is Dave Gibbons talking about the Comic Sans font, and this is one of the things that people love to hate, is hating on Comic Sans and hating on this sort of thing. And so Jason was going to sort of throw it over to you, Ben, what your opinion on Comic Sans is.
Well, no, sir, I don't like it. It's Comic Sans is something that was created by a programmer. It's based off of Costanza's work loosely. All I have to say is thank God for Blambot for existing, because Comic Sans is a blight on the graphic design community. People use Comic Sans in places it's not even meant to be used.
If I could be a devil's advocate here, because the point of lettering in comics is to convey information. Comic Sans does do that. It conveys information. Why is it so important that you use a certain font? I mean, aren't they supposed to be looking at the images?
Typography is one of the most important parts of graphic design. And I say this also as a comic creator, a comic artist, and a graphic designer, that good typography is just as important as everything else. So typography brings everything together, because it's one thing to use a legible font. It's another thing to use a font that complements what you're doing.
See, but here's, I've heard that argument from every graphic designer I have ever known, that typography is an essential part of design. You know where I have never heard it? From anyone who's not a graphic designer. I have never heard anyone who is not a graphic designer read a comic book, look at a flyer, or say anything and go, ugh, not this font again. I've heard it occasionally.
Well, look at it this way. When you look at a great piece of advertisement or a great layout or a great website, it's something that's almost subconscious that makes you go, wow, this is nice. And to explain it to someone like you is difficult, because you're like, oh, I would never notice anyways. You could just throw Arial on it and I'd never know. But see, when you look at one of those great ads, the fact that it looks great to you and I don't have to explain why is proof that typography is important.
I don't know.
It's subconscious.
Seraphin, go ahead.
I got up and left for about a minute. I'm back again.
Ben and I are having an argument. Ben says that typography is essential to making it look professional and nice and having a pleasant experience. My argument is I hear that from graphic designers and no one else in the world.
No, I agree. Typography is part of what, I mean, if you pick up a comic and the art is shitty, are you going to buy that comic if you feel nothing from the art? Like, most people, they say that when they buy a comic, unless they really trust the writer, like it's Alan Moore or somebody, they are going to look at the art first, and that's what sells.
That's Snake Worshipper.
And then what makes them go back and read it is the writing. But the art is the selling point. Mm. And so how is the look of a font any different from the look of the art itself? That's what I think.
Exactly. Let me give you an example. Mm. Send me a scan of any comic page, and I will personally, in 5 minutes, replace that with Times New Roman. And I'll put them side by side, and you know what we're going to pick? The one that's professionally lettered every time.
Okay.
See, I have an obsession with Courier, because Courier to me looks very DIY, and the aesthetic that I'm going for with my a lot of my work is a sort of DIY punk indie kind of feel, and Courier has that old typewriter feel. And you wouldn't use Courier for Spider-Man, but maybe you would use it. Well, for
noir comic, possibly.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you want to look at clever use of typography, look at like Sandman comics, where every member of the Endless, most of them anyway, they have a very unique, like Dream's typography. It's black speech bubbles with white lettering popping, and it's got this sort of haunting feeling, and that's sort of indicative of Dream's personality. Whereas Delirium's, it's all, you know, distorted and colorful bubbles because she's Delirium. She's out there. She's, you know, dreamy and kind of crazy, and well, very crazy actually. And then something like Desire, it's fancy, it's almost curly Q kind of feel to it. But then Death has a very normal kind of looking comic font, because we want to relate to Death as like somebody who you would feel personable with, and that you like, because Neil Gaiman said that Death is based on what he would hope the Grim Reaper, who say that in quotations, would be like if he passed on. Like, who would he want to meet passing on? And so he designed this cute, bubbly goth girl, and the font that's used for her is more normal. So typography can influence how you read what a character is saying just as much as punctuation.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I had a real problem with Sandman reading it because I felt the font was getting in the way. Because I felt it was distracting. I just wanted the information. I didn't want someone to show me how many different fonts they could create. I just wanted information from the text. I would look at the images for the images, and the text was text to convey information.
Yeah.
And I think Eric pictures Death as a naked blonde woman.
Well, you know, it is a personal choice, and some people are going to like what creators do and some don't. But I think that that was an example of what can be done potentially with font. And I think that when you see, let's say you were reading, I just picture if you can reading, I don't know, Sin City, and it's all in Comic Sans. Are you going to take what's being said as seriously as it, as, I don't know, I can't even think of that. I'm not a graphic designer, but just a more gritty or looking font. Like Comic Sans is kind of like the weird.
Well, let me put it this way. It's in the comic book, the font choice is like salt with your food. It's an accent. You don't really know it's there until it's gone.
Unless you're aware of what it's doing.
When salt's gone in your food, your food doesn't taste good anymore because salt sort of livens up your taste buds, makes it more receptive, make food taste more like food. And without salt, it's gone. And that's what good typography is. It's the salt in your meal. If you remove it, it's something's not quite right.
Yeah.
And I really think that typography is important. Eric apparently wants a quest for information.
I have seen too many comics where they've gotten too fancy with the typography, changing it from one place to another, where it just gets distracting.
It's an art. Obviously it's an art, but I think that it takes great skill to pull it off, and it's not, you know, what one creator thinks is going to work is not necessarily going to work for every member of the audience. Not everyone is going to like Alan Moore. Not everyone's going to like Neil Gaiman. But I think that it does, if it's used correctly, it can add impact or subtlety to what you're trying to portray in a comic.
But at the same time, I think there are plenty of perfectly reasonable uses of Comic Sans. I think the hate on it is a little intense.
It is graphically one of the worst fonts I've ever seen.
You know what's wrong with it? It's common. Anything that becomes common cheapens the appearance of something. Like, I have this thing where I refuse to buy Hello Kitty products it's a common product that, like, I'm into Japanese street fashion. I love Lolita, but I will not buy Hello Kitty unless for accessories, because it's a common thing. Like, I prefer Domo-kun or something like that.
Okay, and that's, Eric, one question. Do you have Netflix?
Do I have Netflix? Sure.
Yes. Okay, there is a documentary on Netflix called Helvetica.
Yeah.
Watch it.
I will. That was in my queue. But, I mean, here's the thing. Yeah, I think Seraphine has a point here, because the fonts I hear most derided are Times New Roman, Arial, and Comic Sans. And I think the reason is not because there's anything wrong with the font, it's just because it's overused. And I will agree with that, but that becomes a different argument than saying it's a blight on culture. This is used too much. It makes it look common.
I think blight on culture is like a humorous statement. It's not obviously what people really believe, but it's a sarcastic.
Here's my big problem, and this is the thing that drives me nuts. Letterers never explain themselves. you'll show them something and they say, oh, the font's awful. And you're like, oh, what's wrong with it? The font's awful. You know, and there's never any explanation. Oh, you're using Times New Roman. That's awful. Why? Justify your reason.
Well, Times New Roman you should never use for dialogue, because the eyes can't flow around the serifs to do quick reading.
Well, yes. You have to use
a sans serif font, but something like Arial or Verdana has sharp corners, which really doesn't help with the flow of a comic book. So you have to use something with rounded corners. So you have to use something more like, let's say, Digital Strip or Lambot Pro.
You also don't want to use overly fancy fonts for dialogue, like Curls or something like that,
it's a clear sans serif font. Serifs are the tails and stuff at the end of at the edges of fonts. So sans serif are fonts like Arial, Verdana, Futura, Helvetica.
And that's a really good and well-reasoned argument, and that's the argument we very rarely hear on that subject. But I think I'm going to leave with Ben's very good and well-reasoned argument. I don't know if Jason, are you still here with us, or?
I'm here. Okay. I'm basking in the glow.
You're basking in the glow.
I honestly just never use it, but I can't. I just don't care.
All right. Well, shall we jump to our next topic of making tablet-friendly websites? And Ben, you had a lot of opinions on this.
Well, not opinions, facts. Because I am a web designer. I speak fluent HTML and CSS, and it's very simple, especially if you use the new HTML5 markup. And as a quick aside, HTML5 isn't what people say it is. HTML5 is just simple new tags, like header is now a tag, and footer is now a tag, and content is now a tag. It's none of this other bullshit about, oh, HTML5 replaces Flash. No, when people say that bullshit, what they're really saying is jQuery and JavaScript will replace Flash, which is a lot messier of a solution, and I don't think it's a good answer. But basically, with making great responsive websites, all you really have to do is just use media queries. Use media queries based on the size of your browser window. And by doing that, I actually have several sites.
So, Ben, hold on a second. Can you go and just briefly describe what a media query is?
Okay, a media query is basically you telling the style sheet to look at what the browser it's in, and the media query says, okay, the browser I'm in is X amount of pixels wide. Okay, if it's X amount of pixels wide, do this. So, for instance, let's
cough,
say
I wrote, yeah. No. Do this. Sorry, that was funny.
Apparently it explodes on certain pixels. Well,
let me give you but go ahead. Let's say I wrote a media query that basically said something like, here's an example on something I wrote.
Well, I just...
If, one second here.
Just to summarize, the media query is able to grab information from the person's browser type and the format of the browser, and then pick specific
not browser type, but the but the browser itself, the width of the screen.
Like, I thought let's you say could also do a which sort of browser it is on a media query.
That can be ignored, so I always use screen size. I always put handheld in there, but that doesn't always work.
Yes.
Like, let's say, for instance, in this media query I'm using here, pardon me, I have media handheld, comma, only screen and max width, 767 pixels. So basically what I'm saying is if the max width of the screen is 767 pixels, which is basically I'm targeting something that's about the size of an iPad or smaller, because the iPad has a very weird width. Yep. Because it's a 4x3 screen, which is stupid. It's do this style instead of the styles above it. And basically all these styles do is say shrink it down, make certain things not display because it's on a tablet, make certain things pop in because it's a tablet.
Right.
And you can use the exact same HTML document, exact same URL, and it displays differently on two different devices. On a web browser, it displays nice and big. On a phone, it's nice and compact and quick.
Yeah.
And I like this method because you only have to write and update content in one place versus having to also update an M dot, whatever your domain name is. And then you also have to keep in mind that if you do that, you also have to constantly update a user agent file saying, if it's this user agent, do this. If it's this user agent, do this. And
now, taking it to one more question here, most of the people who are going to be making webcomics, they're not HTML experts. They're not going to be coding their own sites.
It's a very simple language to learn. With
something like WordPress, can you integrate it with WordPress?
Yes, but look, I'm just going to level with you.
Okay.
HTML is not a difficult language to learn. It's not even a programming language. It's a markup language.
I know.
This is very simple stuff. If you keep in mind, if you use a browser like Chrome has a debugger built in. Just hit F12, and you can start messing with stuff on the fly and seeing how it changes.
But
HTML is a very simple language. It's best to write it yourself, or better yet, go into your web browser and type simply responsive CSS framework, and you will see several different ready-made templates ready to go. Like there's lots of people who built grid systems with a responsive design built in, and these are ready to go, ready to download, free to download.
Yes, and that's sort of the key. You can find these for free because I know HTML is a simple language, but there are a lot of people who don't want to have to take the time to learn it and program it themselves.
It's not a programming language; it's a markup.
Yeah, mark it up themselves, and particularly if you're updating a lot.
Don't want to take the time to actually write it by hand, or to use something like Dreamweaver. The biggest, you know, I'm looking at this from the perspective of somebody who is working on prose and poetry. I still don't think this is a good solution for something like an e-reader, but I think that's probably beside the point. I like the example that you sent us, Ben. I've been playing with it back and forth, and what I'm specifically looking for is the imagery. The imagery shrinks down and becomes, you can still read it. It's still not sliding off the page, and you're not trying to read text and scrolling with it. So I think that that's a benefit.
Yes, that example is one of my favorites, since I have done this in many other projects at work. And really, the biggest thing, like I said, is this is designed to respond to the screen itself versus having some back-end programming. Like I said, there are two different schools of thought. There are people who say, let's use a user agent string, which is all back-end programming, where you send them to a mobile dot page. And then there's this, where you only write content once and it just responds. And the whole idea is you write the content simply. You just have the page respond differently. And I try to write the content to be very simple to follow for anyone.
All right. So let's move along. Unless, Seraphine, do you have anything to say about tablet design?
Yeah, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. Yeah. That's what I'm just saying. Like, I learned basic, like, bare bones HTML in high school. And I remember, like, href equals, yeah. You know, I don't own a tablet. One day I'm sure I will own a tablet. I really have nothing to say. I'm so old school here. I don't know.
You are sort of the example I'm saying. There's lots of people now making web comics who are not web people. And they're using the tools that are given to them. And they should be aware of it, but there is a limit. But this is something that you have to be aware of how your site looks on a tablet in general.
Very true. Yeah, and I just hope that I'm with Rampage, and I don't know what it looks like on a tablet, actually. I've never seen it. Maybe something some special program will automatically know how to make it look good. I don't know.
Yeah.
Totally not my world. Totally not my field. Maybe someday I'll learn. So,
well, just one additional thing, because I wanted to ask this of Ben. So the imagery on a dynamic page used with this, say, for example, with HTML5, there's also the download content. So do you still have to worry about, like, the JPEG image is still going to stay the same number of kilobytes, correct? Or megabytes, depending on what
yes,
it is.
Yes, yes. Yeah. The images are exactly the same images. But the thing is this. You have to keep in mind that with mobile browsers, even with the 3G phones now, that these images download instantly. And the HTML is so tiny that, you know, I built responsive sites where the whole site is about 2 megs big, images included.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Yeah. All right. So we were talking here. One of the things that we wanted to talk about, creator versus character, which is more important? And this is sort of an interesting discussion that I was sort of interested in. I don't know. I'm going to throw it off to you, Seraphine. Do you have any opinions on this?
Well, I think that people are going to, once a creator gets a following, there are obviously going to be like legions of fans who are automatically go, oh, so-and-so put out a book, I'll buy it. But, you know, a lot of new, and I'm hoping I'm not trailing too far off the subject here, but a lot of, you know, I think there's a lot of amazing creators out there underrepresented either because they're not advertised enough or I think it's I think that it's kind of difficult for me to comment because it comes down to sort of more like, is this sort of like more of an ethical question or is it more of a,
well, the survey we had here, it was an informal survey, they are basically saying, what's going to draw you to a comic more? Is that it's a Batman comic or that it's a comic written by Josh Whedon?
I see what you mean. Okay.
And
Josh Whedon never wrote Batman.
Yeah, I know. I'm talking about competition between two different – it's a Josh Whedon Runaways comic. Does that make you happy, Ben? Go ahead.
I would look for Chuck Dixon's name. I would look for names like that. Okay. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I think that for me, it's going to be the characters first. It's going to be what the comic is about, and then if it is a real stinker, like some of the Tank Girl comics, because I was a big Hewlett Martin fan, and Tank Girl, the original Tank Girl comics, but there were some of them that were less than ideal for me. Then I'm going to be kind of like, do I want to keep going back to this, or maybe this, you know? But really, for me, I think that it is going to be what is familiar to me as characters go before writers, because I know that's going to vary from person to person. I mean, there are some writers that I'm going to say, oh, they did, you know, I don't buy tons of comics, but when I do, I tend to go for story and character before writer, and then if a writer really impresses me consistently, then I'll start to look at the writer. The writer has to hook me before I do that.
How about you, Ben? Are you a writer person or a character person?
I look for a writer writing a specific character. If it's a writer that I respect and I see him doing something that I know he'll do a great job on, or I'm interested to see what he will be doing with it, I look for it specifically. If I wanted to read comics specifically on the characters I like, I would be buying nothing but shit comics right now. So, because I love Spider-Man, and I love and I love Superman and Batman, but the writers they have right now are crap. I look for great writers. So, you know, if Chuck Dixon is working on something, oh, I got to read Chuck Dixon. If Carl Kessel's working on something, I'd read something by Carl Kessel. It's something like this. It's because I read their books back when I was fans of the characters that they wrote, and that's what earned me the loyalty. But now I look for the names, not the characters, because I know who's writing the characters right now. It's you know, like when I kind of like the Hulk, but Jeff Loeb wrote the Hulk, and when he wrote the Hulk, he introduced Red Hulk, and that was one of the worst things he ever did. And Jeff Loeb's a crap writer, so I don't read Jeff Loeb.
But yeah, I think this is sort of the thing. I think creators are characters are what initially hook people and give them the opportunity to learn about creators, because a creator doesn't come from nowhere. The creator comes from having worked on a specific story that you liked, and you went to that specific story because of the characters. So I think asking which is more important is sort of overlooking the back and forth. I also think that when you're talking about audiences, there are different types of audiences. Some are superficial readers and will just say, Spider-Man, I like Spider-Man, and won't think about the creators at all. I think that there's a large audience on that side. That's my opinion.
Yeah, well, the other thing is that if you are focusing completely on a character, you get into the situation which the big two are in right now, is they have to reboot the universe every 3 years just to have any kind of character development, and then it all gets wiped away.
The problem with that is the editors have this line of thinking that any issue could be anyone's first issue.
Yeah. Absolutely, and they've stated that. I mean, that's been stated over. That was the whole reason for the DC reboot, is to get more readers and to introduce more people to comics and to bring people back. Several people I know said, oh, I'm going to go back to DC now that I can get into the storylines.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's also a show of taste. If you're willing to branch out from, you know, the popular mainstream comics and titles out there, I think that's something that's to your benefit. I mean, everybody gets pissed off that the last Hulk comic was shit, but I mean, don't buy it. And that thought never enters the mind of a lot of those people.
Oh, I haven't paid for a paper comic book in years.
Shh.
Yeah, well, we're in the webcomic.
I mean, I haven't bought one.
So,
okay?
So here's the
I know exactly what
you're... Here's the question. In webcomics, do you, I mean, because we do have the situation now where people who have popular webcomics have tried to branch out into other comics. Do you follow the creator or do you follow the characters?
To the extent that it fails.
I follow Phil Foglio simply because of his work in print, and I am an avid Girl Genius reader because of the stuff he did back with in DC back in the day, and I always, with webcomics, I give anything a chance, but really, the more established people have been branching out more, and the ones that I trust are the ones I go down and follow. Like, for instance, there was this one comic I remember by this guy I know about Barbarian, and then I found he was doing this other thing about Ninja.
Bust. Yeah, but that is an interesting story. I have branched out, but when I branched out, the audience didn't come.
Go ahead. I want to say I have a confession to make. I don't read webcomics. I write one, I draw one, but I'm a paper person. Like, I will read a webcomic if it's on paper. I will buy the book. I know it's kind of stupid because I'm spending money when I could read it for free, but I just can't bring myself to sit and stare at a screen and read page after page. If it was a Kodo thing, then I would have no problem, but just sitting at my, even though I do spend a lot of time at the computer, I'm so old school. And I have lots of people who read mine, and because my old work is very wordy and I'm completely self-aware of that they said, oh, I will totally read your comic if you print it. So I printed 100 copies of it, and I pretty much, I think I've got 10 left, printed them back in June. And yeah, no, it's just, I think especially for certain formats, it works better on paper. And yeah, so that's my confession. I don't read webcomics.
That's personal opinion. That's yeah. And it takes time too, is the thing.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I think that with that, we're going to wrap up the show. So I would like to take a second to thank everybody. Seraphine, thank you for being on the show. Is there anything that you want to push right now since you got the mic?
Well, just keep checking out my webcomic at www.asylumsquad.com. I have put out my first book. I only have about between 10 and 15 copies left. It can be ordered if you want to get one. I will be reprinting hopefully in the next few months. But yeah, do check out my comic at asylumsquad.com. I try to update as often as I can, and I hope to have a new book by sometime the end of next year, sometime in 2013, at least have one finished, maybe not printed. So just keep reading.
Very cool. Yes. Go check it out. And Ben, anything you want to push, podcast?
Yes, the Animation Aficionados at animationaficionados.com. Come listen to us. We're going to be releasing two episodes this week and next week. Look forward to it. Our Bleach episode's coming out this Friday. And we still have our contest going on. The listeners, send in your Naga laugh. And the best one will be played on the episode, on the Slayers episode.
That's awesome. You've been busy. Damn. And then I'd like to thank Eric for being on the show and helping me out.
Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome. Okay, so that is it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. And you can always check us out on the site. If you have any comments or questions, we'll be happy to answer them or, you know, make fun of you if it's poorly spelled. All right?
Stop making fun of me.
As I said, have a great week, everybody.